Good evening. The Postmaster General blinks. The Democrats soar and activists sue for police transparency in New York. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. The emerging political opposition in Belarus set up a council inside the country today, a move strongman leader President Alexander Lukashenko denounced as an attempt to seize power. The development comes 10 days after a disputed election triggered mass demonstrations. Thousands of protesters have taken to the streets, braving a crackdown by the authorities to demand Lukashenko resign. There have been increasing signs that the burly former Soviet collective farm boss is losing his grip on the country. He's ruled for 26 years. The Interior Ministry acknowledged on Tuesday that some police had quit rather than confront the crowds of protesters. Televised scenes from the capital, Minsk, showed massive crowds milling in warm sunshine, apparently marveling at the first open show of public opposition to Lukashenko, where days before, riot police had brutally beaten demonstrators. And in Washington, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence released a report charging Russia used GOP operative Paul Manafort and WikiLeaks to influence the 2016 election to help Trump's campaign. The investigation by Robert Mueller into charges of Russian interference found no conclusive evidence of coordination between Russia and the Trump campaign, while there were many instances when Trump may have tried to impede the investigation. Meanwhile, Trump's new Postmaster General announced Tuesday he's stopping some changes to mail delivery that critics warned could disrupt the November election. Postmaster General Louis DeJoy said he would suspend several of his initiatives, including the removal of the distinctive blue mailboxes that prompted an outcry, until after the election to avoid even the appearance of impact on election mail, as he said. He also said, "We will deliver the nation's election mail on time." He said that all in a statement. House Democrat Steny Hoyer had this to say.
And the fact that this Postmaster General would have taken actions unilaterally, obviously with the agreement of the President of the United States, without giving anybody the right to comment, which is preserved to them under the law, the actions today, where the Attorney General has now said, we're not going to implement any of those changes until after the election. Well, we're going to make sure in law that that is the case, because he should not, and he should not have done what he's done to date, and he must reverse any adverse consequences of the actions that have been taken to date.
Maryland Representative Steny Hoyer. President Trump weighed in on the issue today as well, saying mail-in voting in the November election could force a do-over.
Absentee is great. It's been working for a long time, like in Florida. Absentee, you request, and it comes in, and then you send it back. Absentee is great. But universal is going to be a disaster, the likes of which our country has never seen. It'll end up being a rigged election, or they will never come out with an outcome. They'll have to do it again. And nobody wants that, and I don't want that.
President Trump. Trump does not have the authority to reschedule an election. A national election redo has never occurred in the more than 200 years the U.S. has held elections, including during the Civil War, the Great Depression, and two World Wars. And 100 years ago today, the 19th Amendment was adopted, giving women in the United States the vote, called suffrage. The state of Tennessee was the 36th state to ratify the amendment. Today, 127 women serve in the House of Representatives and 26 women in the United States Senate. There are 9 states with women governors, and about 20% of cities with more than 300,000 residents have women mayors. But the top job, president, slipped through the fingers of Hillary Clinton in 2016. Yesterday, the first day of the Democratic National Convention, Democrats began the week-long process of nominating the first woman, a woman of color, Kamala Harris, for the job of vice president. The most notable speaker, former First Lady Michelle Obama, addressed the voting issue, saying this election was so important, voters should pack some food and prepare for a long wait if necessary to vote.
We have to vote for Joe Biden in numbers that cannot be ignored. Because right now, folks who know they cannot win fair and square at the ballot box are doing everything they can to stop us from voting. They're closing down polling places in minority neighborhoods. They're purging voter rolls. They're sending people out to intimidate voters, and they're lying about the security of our ballots. These tactics are not new. But this is not the time to withhold our votes in protest or play games with candidates who have no chance of winning. We have got to vote like we did in 2008 and 2012. We've got to show up with the same level of passion and hope for Joe Biden. We've got to vote early, in person if we can. We've got to request our mail-in ballots right now, tonight, and send them back immediately. And follow up to make sure they're received. And then make sure our friends and families do the same. We have got to grab our comfortable shoes, put on our masks, pack a brown bag, dinner, and maybe breakfast too. Because we've got to be willing to stand in line all night if we have to.
And as former First Lady Michelle Obama, President Trump tweeted rants throughout the morning targeting Obama's speech at a ceremony to posthumously pardon Susan B. Anthony, arrested in 1872 for illegally casting a vote. He blasted the former First Lady.
No, I thought her speech was very divisive. And frankly, I wouldn't even be here if it weren't for Barack Obama. See, we're standing in the White House. I wouldn't be in the White House except for Barack Obama, because they did a bad job, Biden and Obama. And if they did a good job, I wouldn't be here. I'd be building buildings someplace and having a good time.
President Trump. Freelance journalist Greg Palast has been following voter suppression and other attacks on the franchise by both Democrats and Republicans. He's the author of How Trump Stole 2020 from Seven Stories Press. Palast says, whatever the case, don't trust the mail to get your vote in on time.
The post office has always done a terrible job with mail-in voting. There is some insane fantasy that mail-in voting is wonderful and has always worked well when it's been a disaster. We had 22% of all mail-in votes in 2016 were not counted. Let me repeat that. One in five ballots in 16, when Obama was president, were not counted. And so the idea that, mail-in voting is easy and wonderful, forget it. Yeah, in the West Coast, in left coast nation of California, Oregon, Washington, Hawaii, Colorado, we have what's called mail-in voting. That is, you automatically get a ballot by mail. But in the rest of America, voting by mail is hell. One of the worst places in America is New York. Look at what just happened in New York. You know, 28% of all ballots were challenged. Now, who were they challenged by? The Democratic machine, Carolyn Maloney. Now, imagine this. You had the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, who said, mail-in voting is wonderful. Everyone should send in their ballots. Bill de Blasio said, everyone should mail in their ballots. That's a safe, secure way, and that's the best way to vote. And then once they got the ballots, they said, ha-ha, gotcha. Now that you've mailed us your ballots, we're not going to count them. 28% were not counted, and they stole the election from the Justice Democrat, Suraj Patel. So if the Democrats are going to challenge one in four ballots, what do you think the Republicans are going to do?
Why is Congress coming back then to debate the way the DeJoy is running the post office if this is not crucial to the election?
God bless the Postmaster General, because he's woken up some people to the fact that mail-in voting is dangerous. Ask for your ballot at least 2 months in advance for mail-in in states like New York, where you have to put in a request. If you don't get it, go to your county clerk, county elections board, or county clerk. They will give you your ballot. But you are not going to get your ballot no matter what unless you're registered. So number one, make sure you're registered. We had 16.7 million people removed from the voter rolls. You could be one. I was one. I was purged, just so you know. Check your registration. If you're not registered, they're not mailing you a ballot. And I don't care if you've been registered forever. And How Trump Stole 2020, I open up with, I'm at an Atlanta polling station with Christine Jordan. She's been voting at the same schoolhouse for 50 years since her cousin Martin Luther King was assassinated. 50 years at the same polling station. They threw her out. They said, you're not registered here. 50 years at the same place. So if she could be thrown out, if Martin Luther King's cousin can be thrown out, you can be thrown out.
Are you fully convinced there is even going to be an election?
Depends what you call an election. If Trump can successfully challenge 20 million ballots, which I think that they will, Trump can easily disqualify enough ballots to be reelected.
This is a key election for voting more than even others.
If you don't pick your own leaders, if your leaders tell you what to do and you haven't chosen your leaders, by definition, you're a slave. Democracy is an institutionalized slave revolt. So this is the one time when the slaves can rise up and say, nah, we want a change in leadership. So do you want to be a slave or do you want to take control? So yes, you have to vote, but you have to know how to vote. So you're going to go to gregpalace.com. At the back of How Trump Stole 2020 is what I call the ballot condom. And that, you don't wrap it around your ballot. You follow the seven steps to save your vote. Check your registration, fill out the ballot like you're taking the SAT, no missed marks. And by the way, hundreds of voters in Manhattan lost their vote because they taped the envelope shut. Don't tape a ballot envelope shut. Hundreds lost their vote because they didn't add the second signature. There's a signature inside and a signature outside. There's a very good chance the post office won't postmark your ballot because by policy they don't if it's a pre-stamped envelope, which it is in New York and many other states. So they don't postmark it. But New York law requires it be postmarked. So what do? Don't use the post office. Don't go postal. You're insane if you do. Pick up your ballot, bring it back.
All right.
And don't do it on election day, whatever you do. Because you know what? You shouldn't have to die to cast your ballot.
Freelance journalist Greg Palast. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Several members of the Republican Party spoke in support of presumptive nominees Joe Biden and Kamala Harris last night, including former New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman and former Ohio Governor John Kasich. But arguably the most moving speech was from an ordinary citizen, Kristen Urquiza, whose father, a Trump supporter, died of COVID.
I'm Kristen Urquiza. I'm one of the many who has lost a loved one to COVID. My dad, Mark Anthony Urquiza, should be here today, but he isn't. He had faith in Donald Trump. He voted for him, listened to him, believed him and his mouthpieces when they said that coronavirus was under control and going to disappear, that it was okay to end social distancing rules before it was safe, and that if you had no underlying health conditions, you'd probably be fine. So in late May, after the stay-at-home order was lifted in Arizona, my dad went to a karaoke bar with his friends. A few weeks later, he was put on a ventilator. And after five agonizing days, he died alone in the ICU with a nurse holding his hand. My dad was a healthy 65-year-old. His only pre-existing condition was trusting Donald Trump, and for that, he paid with his life. I am not alone. Once I told my story, a lot of people reached out to me to share theirs. They asked me to help them keep their communities safe, especially communities of color, which have been disproportionately affected. They asked me, a normal person, to help because Donald Trump won't. The coronavirus has made it clear that there are two Americas, the America that Donald Trump lives in and the America that my father died in. Enough is enough. Donald Trump may not have caused the coronavirus, but his dishonesty and his irresponsible actions made it so much worse. We need a leader who has a national, coordinated, data-driven response to stop this pandemic from claiming more lives and to safely reopen the country. We need a leader who will step in on day one and do his job to care. One of the last things that my father said to me was that he felt betrayed by the likes of Donald Trump. And so when I cast my vote for Joe Biden, I will do it for my dad.
Kristen Urquiza, whose father, a Trump supporter, died of COVID. In a moving tribute, thousands of photographs of COVID victims were projected on a screen in the form of a nurse wearing a mask. And New York's Governor Andrew Cuomo also gave a moving speech, also lambasting Trump.
New Yorkers were ground zero for the COVID virus and have gone from one of the highest infection rates on the globe to one of the lowest. We went through hell, but we've learned much. We know that our problems go beyond the COVID virus. COVID is the symptom, not the illness. Our nation is in crisis, and in many ways, COVID is just a metaphor. A virus attacks when the body is weak and when it cannot defend itself. Over these past few years, America's body politic has been weakened. The divisions have been growing deeper. The anti-Semitism, the anti-Latino, the anti-immigrant fervor, the racism in Charlottesville, where the KKK didn't even bother to wear their hoods. And in Minnesota, where the life was squeezed from Mr. Floyd. Only a strong body can fight off the virus. And America's divisions weakened it. Donald Trump didn't create the initial division. The division created Trump. He only made it worse.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. The Democratic convention included video of huge numbers of peaceful protesters following the police killing of George Floyd. Michelle Obama mentioned police killings as she blamed Trump for inaction.
As George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and a never-ending list of innocent people of color continue to be murdered, stating the simple fact that a Black life matters is still met with derision from the nation's highest office. Because whenever we look to this White House for some leadership or consolation or any semblance of steadiness, what we get instead is chaos, division, and a total and utter lack of empathy. Empathy. That's something I've been thinking a lot about lately. The ability to walk in someone else's shoes. The recognition that someone else's experience has value too. Most of us practice this without a second thought. If we see someone suffering or struggling, we don't stand in judgment, we reach out, because there, but for the grace of God, go I.
Michelle Obama. And the candidate who might have been Progressive Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, with more than 1,000 delegates, promised that Joe Biden would herald progressive reforms.
My friends, I say to you, to everyone who supported other candidates in the primary, and to those who may have voted for Donald Trump in the last election. The future of our democracy is at stake. The future of our economy is at stake. The future of our planet is at stake. We must come together, defeat Donald Trump, and elect Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as our next president and vice president. My friends, the price of failure is just too great to imagine. Thank you.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. And closer to home, advocates and elected officials rallied today to condemn an attempt by the police union to roll back the repeal of a law known as 50A. The rally, organized by Communities United for Police Reform, was held in advance of a federal hearing on a lawsuit brought by the cops who say the repeal leaves officers accused of wrongdoing open to retaliation. Even if the police watchdog, known as the Civilian Complaint Review Board, or CCRB, finds the allegations unsubstantiated. Activists say the cops have too much power to quash investigations of misconduct, and that even an unsubstantiated claim of police abuse sets off alarm bells on dangerous cops. Donovan Richards is co-chair of the City Council's Progressive Caucus.
Let's be clear that the community is being held hostage by bad cops and also the robbers, and partially because there is so much mistrust in our communities for the police department. Therefore, the community won't come forward to actually work with the department to end some of the street violence as well.
My name is Nick Smith, and I'm happy to represent our public advocate as our first deputy. 4 days ago, I woke up and turned on the news and saw a familiar and scary sight. It was Pat Lynch from the PBA standing next to Donald Trump in the White House to endorse him. And what did Pat Lynch say in that endorsement? Quote, "I'm supporting Donald Trump because he is a law and order president. What does that mean? That means that we don't give a crap about what the folks here, Mrs. Bob, Mrs. Baez, are saying. We don't care about black and brown lives in your city and across the country. We want to continue to repress and oppress black and brown lives in this city, and we don't give a damn what you have to say.
Our next speaker is Susan Lerner, Executive Director of Common Cause, who coordinated an amicus brief from Good Government Organization.
Not only is the injunction in this lawsuit an attack on the need for police oversight, don't be confused. It is a backdoor attack on the very principles that undergird the Freedom of Information Act. Public policy that is uniformly admired at all levels of our government. There is no basis for this lawsuit. The repeal of 50A was not only popular, but well-founded in the law.
Good morning. My name is Janos Martin. I'm a civil rights lawyer, and I filed an amicus with 15 fellow former CCRB staffers. And the reason we filed is because we've seen this database, we know what's in it, we've worked with it, and we know that keeping it away from the public would be unjust. When a complaint goes to the CCRB, it is the product of months of scrupulous investigation from investigators interviewing and collecting evidence, from lawyers reviewing the case, from board members appointed by the mayor and city council agreeing that misconduct occurred. So when something is substantiated, we know that something serious has happened and serious people have looked at it. That is a legal proceeding that should be in the public record. You can only do so much at that agency because of the power the NYPD has. So if we can't hold them accountable on our own, maybe we can hold them accountable together.
Although the court froze the release of 81,000 records, a cache of documents had already been released to news agencies, to the news agency ProPublica. Advocates argue, therefore, the issue of privacy is moot. And WBAI's Jillian Jonas brought up a question to Mayor Bill de Blasio at his news conference today. She asked if tenants might lose rent protection if the current exodus by city residents increases the vacancy rate beyond a threshold that could end rent stabilization and rent control in the city.
There are seniors living on fixed incomes mostly, and they're controlled by the state offices.
It's a very important question. Jillian, I think I can say this with assurance, especially given the legislature we now have in Albany. And I worked long and hard with countless others to ensure that we finally had a Democratic state Senate. And we've got two leaders in Andrea Stewart Cousins and Carl Hastie in Albany who are both clearly progressive in fighting for the needs of tenants. So it's literally inconceivable to me that there would be any diminution of rent stabilization or rent control. I think it's a fair question to say, could we be in an unprecedented situation? I think that's a very fair question. I thought what you were going to say is, with all of these vacancies occurring, are rent levels in the market going to start to go down? I do think rent levels are going to start to go down. I think you're seeing evidence of it already. But it's a fair question, could it be a legal trigger? Even if that is possible, I don't have a doubt in my mind that the legislature will immediately create continuity with our current approach to rent stabilization and rent control. We absolutely need that in New York City. If there was any question about that, I and many others would be in Albany fighting for it immediately.
And finally, Joe Biden is drawing on a collection of his party's most experienced leaders at the Democratic National Convention to underscore what he calls a current global leadership deficit that threatens U.S. national security under Donald Trump. Former President Bill Clinton and former Secretary of State John Kerry are among the heavy hitters on a Tuesday night schedule that emphasizes a simple theme: leadership matters. Former President Jimmy Carter, now 95 years old, will also make an appearance on a night he will formally earn his party's presidential nomination. Former Vice President Biden will also introduce his wife, Jill Biden, to the nation for the first time as a prospective first lady. Biden is fighting unprecedented logistical challenges to deliver his message during an all-virtual convention this week as the coronavirus epidemic continues to claim hundreds of American lives each day and wreaks havoc on the economy. The former vice president will become his party's nominee as a pre-recorded roll call vote from delegates in all 50 states' heirs, and the four-day convention will culminate on Thursday when he accepts the nomination inside a mostly empty Delaware convention hall. His running mate, California Senator Kamala Harris, will become the first woman of color to accept a major party's vice presidential nomination on Wednesday. And that's some of the news for Tuesday, August 18, 2020. The news is produced with Linda Perry and Jillian Jonas. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News from New York, I'm Paul DiRienzo. Thanks for joining us.